You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby.
Something a little different for you today. Had an opportunity recently to connect, just to like say hi, to a Cuban podcaster. And that caught my attention immediately because I didn't know that Cuba had podcasters. I mean, I knew that Cuba had internet, and my understanding was that they only got it recently. I remember when I was a tech journalist covering stories of Cubans in Havana lining up for limited access to very shitty and censored internet. I am aware that Cuba does not have press freedom laws. I am aware that the state often transgresses and intimidates journalists in Cuba. So the very existence of a Cuban podcaster was interesting to me. I later learned that there is something of a Cuban podcasting boom right now, and the material does get critical of government. Well, instead of just meeting Camilo Condes, we decided to record our conversation to see if it's something that we might want to bring to you. And that is what we're going to do today. This was such a surprising person and such a surprising chat for me. I will admit that when I conjure up pictures in my head of Cubans, either I'm thinking of people who are like trying to escape on a like flimsy raft, taking their lives in their hands, or the only firsthand images I have in my head, I will confess, are of Cubans in the service industry, serving drinks and doing hospitality work in a resort that I went to in Varadero. I think that's the experience that a lot of Canadians have with Cubans. But if you check out Camilo Condes' Instagram, you will see the photo reel of a guy who does not fit either of those stereotypes. You'll see pictures of this guy seemingly with no issue getting out of Cuba anytime he wants. He is a globe-trotting traveler, but he always returns to Cuba and returns to podcasting, even though every time he does it, he risks interrogation and intimidation from his own government. Wait for it.
He pasado la semana con un abanico en la mano y un ventilador entre las piernas.
Ay, no necesitaba esa imagen en mi cabeza tan pronto.
Voy a exhibir a Michael en una jaula a ver si me dan dinero a mí.
Mira, está insinuando que, bueno, está diciendo por las claras que soy un...
Camilo, can you tell me what is your podcast? What is Radio Enjambre?
My podcast, its title is El Enjambre. It's like the beehive.
Uh-huh.
It's a weekly podcast in Cuba. We post every Saturday night. We try to tell the news, at the same time make fun of the news about Cuba. We don't talk about any international issues. We don't get into the politics or the news of any other country. We focus on what's happening in Cuba every week, and we try to discuss it using mainly the opinions of experts, academics, people who have a high knowledge about the country and why the things are happening, how they're happening, and what we can think about that.
I found the Cuban me. This is what we do. We have a podcast about Canadian news. We talk to experts. We also make fun of it. And we don't really concern ourselves with the news outside of Canada. We're talking about Canada here. So it's good to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
What do you like best about podcasting?
I think it's to have the, in the case of the type of program I do, the type of show that I do, because I consider what we do a show. Some people think that we're doing independent journalism, and I do understand that we do it in some sense, but I do like to call it a show in the sense that we try to entertain to our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I like the most is to get the people to open their eyes about issues that are happening in Cuba, problems that we have that are not in the mainstream news, for example, academic journals, right? And they write a very good article about Cuba. How many people are going to read that? Not many. But I get to take that information, add some jokes, put it in a way that any Cuban sitting on a corner can talk about this, and then people can digest this information easily, and they can learn something they wouldn't have never heard about if we didn't do it.
Yeah, you can take serious stuff and make a show, entertain people and engage them. How popular is your show, if that's not too personal?
Every week, according to the stats, I have around 10,000 plays per episode.
I have a picture in my head of life in Cuba, of the Cuban internet, and it's a bit of a cartoon, I have to confess. I last checked in on Cuba as a technology reporter, and you know, this is a good 15 years ago or more, and there was like a story about the one internet cafe in Havana where people had to line up to get a few minutes of really crappy internet. I didn't know that podcasting existed in Cuba. When I look at your Instagram, forgive me, I don't see images of an impoverished person trying to flee Cuba. Anyway, I see somebody who's an entrepreneur taking pictures from sightseeing destinations, vacations all around the world. It looks like the Instagram account of a well-traveled, relatively happy and healthy entrepreneur. What can you tell me to disabuse me of some of these notions? Tell me about like who you are, why you are still in Cuba, and what is like digital culture in Cuba? How big is podcasting in Cuba? Tell me everything you can.
Yeah, I think the first thing I must say is that Instagram never tells the truth.
But your lies are just as convincing as everyone else's.
Exactly. Yeah, I know that. Let's add a little of context. You are completely right. 15 years ago, it was impossible to freely access to the internet or easily access, because it's not really free right now in Cuba, as there is a lot of censorship. But back in November 2018, the Cuban government for the first time allowed us Cubans to access to the internet through mobile data. So for the first time on our cell phones, sitting on our couch, we were able to access to the internet. And I think this has changed a lot in our country in every sense, and especially politically. A year later, in September 2019, I decided to make a podcast because I had spent a whole year listening to podcasts from other countries and listening to what people were producing and saying. I wanted to do something like that. So I created a podcast where three very different people could discuss the weekly news in our country. In my case, I have had the opportunity to travel abroad. Right now, actually, I'm in Vancouver and in Canada, because I'm at the Latin American Studies Association. It's a big professional network, mainly of academics studying Latin America, where I came to talk about labor issues in the private sector in Cuba. So that's why you see these pictures on Instagram, mostly from professional events that I attend. The reality is that most Cubans, especially right now, they are eager to leave the country. They're trying to flee the country because we are in the middle of a very bad economic and political situation.
So where do you fit in? What is your life like? And when you call yourself an entrepreneur, what is your business? And is it podcasting? Do you make money from podcasting, or do you have something else?
No, I have a company. Back in September 2021, for the first time, the Cuban government allowed private companies to be open in Cuba.
Uh-huh.
So I became part of the people who ventured to legalize our businesses, because we were categorized by the government as cuenta propistas. This would be something like self-employed. So before that, we were only allowed to be like this self-employed, that it was a figure where you could have a business, but you were not a legal proper company or a business. So since September 2021, we are proper businesses. I have a small company of electrical contractors. His name is Lucendi. We are LLCs.
Limited liability companies, yeah, for the first time, yeah.
Exactly. According to the most recent data, we have around 8,000 private companies in Cuba.
That's fascinating. For private companies to be 2 years old, for the mobile internet to be 5 years old, and you are deeply involved in both of those things, and that tells one story of Cuba, like it's opening up, people are able to build wealth, communication is opening up, expression is opening up. That's one story. But then the fact that hundreds of thousands of people are fleeing, that tells a different story.
Yeah, because it's not white and black. Even though we have private companies, I don't think that the government is really opening to us. There was the biggest citizen protest in the history of Cuba happened in July 2021. Just 2 months later, the government, for the first time, approved private companies, you know, as a way to relieve the economy.
Uh-huh.
So I don't think that the government is trying to open up in any way. I don't think there is more freedom of expression in Cuba. I think actually there is even less freedom of expression compared to 5 years ago. There are a lot of political activists and independent journalists who have been forced into exile. But the government is only trying to sustain itself by allowing people to open up private companies to provide employment for Cubans so they don't have to provide employment for them and pay them a salary. This is how I see it. I don't think they're trying to empower the Cuban people. They're trying to make it last longer for themselves.
Okay, so what that was what we call free expression, criticism of the state, the role of, you know, journalism or commentary, criticism. It's something that I was under the impression you are not allowed to do. And actually, one of the people who kind of buttressed my notion that you live in a repressive dictatorship that forbids such things is yourself. I learned from your website that in 2021, the Cuban government issued a decree attempting to define acceptable speech on the internet. Here are the two things you're not allowed to do. I found this really interesting. You're not allowed to spread false news or make comments that damage the prestige of the country. Our country is also looking at trying to stop the spread of fake news, and critics of that would say that that's actually just the government trying to stop anti-government sentiment, and people say that's ridiculous. This isn't Cuba over here. But the Cuban decree bundles false news and government-damaging speech into the same anti-social media decree. How were you able to say this thing to me now? How are you able to podcast and I assume say similar things? If you do, is your podcast critical? I don't know how you would talk about the news and politics without being critical, but I suppose it's possible. What are the laws? Are you involved in a dangerous enterprise in podcasting in Cuba?
It's not only about the country, but also the government officials. Actually, there is one very notorious case of a person who is not actually into any type of media of any type, just a person doing Facebook videos in his house that was criticizing the Cuban president Miguel Díaz-Canel, and he spent 2 years in jail because of that. He was released recently.
Mm-hmm.
And this tells you how bad the situation can get in Cuba. But yes, there are different degrees of censorship in the country and different ways that people are criticizing what's happening in Cuba. I don't think there are many people in the country that are happy with the current state. I don't think there are many people in the country that are not criticizing the current state of our country or government officials. And I think this is a majority of the people right now who are unhappy with the situation that we are living. The censorship has different degrees, and we have tried to not burst into flames too quick. You just said the dictatorship in our country, and we have never used those terms. We have never said dictatorship, regime, dictator.
Mm-hmm.
We never use that kind of language in our podcast. We try to be as respectful as we can. You know, we say President Díaz-Canel, the government of the Díaz-Canel. I was once interviewed, this is the term, state security in Cuba calls to be interrogated because I was being very harsh on the podcast to our Minister of Economy, especially because he's not an economist and knows nothing about the economy. And I had to tone down these direct attacks I was doing because I would suffer consequences.
Yo no traigo un titular, sino una nota informativa. Ustedes saben que a mí me encantan, me apasionan las notas informativas.
Es una cosa obsesiva. Si hay un comunicado, una...
Well, yeah, they don't want you to poke the bear really hard. So what we try to do is we mostly use official data and we mostly use official news articles from government newspapers to prove a point. So we try to depend on the information, the very, very little information they provide to paint a picture about how bad the situation is in the country and to make people understand how bad the situation is in the country without trying to rely on information or data that is not verified or information or data that they think is untrue, that is false. Because, yes, if they consider that you are providing false information, you will also suffer the consequences. You can be fined, but you can be arrested because of this. So we try to stay away from all of that. And what we say is like, okay, this is the info I have. This is the info I'm going to use. And we're going to talk about this.
Well, that answers one question. I mean, the fact that you're able to do this is not because you're flying under the radar. The government is listening, and they did knock on your door when you got close to that line or maybe put a toe over it. It's also fascinating for me to hear. You can criticize them as long as you're using their information to do so. That feels delicate to me because...
That's a thin line.
If you can work within those constraints and really level a devastating critique, I doubt they would say, oh, well, at least he's playing by the rules. I guess there's nothing we can do. The rules could probably change pretty quickly.
Yeah, the rules change constantly. And also there is something in our favor. We strongly oppose countrywide sanctions on Cuba. And we are very vocal about this. And this is something that the government also does. They are constantly complaining about the U.S. embargo. I do believe they are wrong, and I do criticize these sanctions.
Uh-huh.
I do not think that the whole Cuban people should be under the scope of these sanctions.
So some of the things you say and believe are aligned with what the government says, and that makes this a bit more complicated.
Regarding sanctions on the Cuban people, yes.
How do those sanctions factor into your business as a podcaster? We run a podcasting business here where mostly in Canada, but from all over the world, people send us money directly through, you know, intermediaries, you know, Patreon and Supercast. We sell merchandise. We sell advertising. I don't know if there are Squarespace ads or MeUndies or, you know, mattress ads on your podcast from American companies. We do a lot of business with American companies here. How do you pay for your podcast? How do the sanctions factor into your business as a podcast professional?
So when we started, I had no budget, no money to create a podcast. So I went to visit the head of El Toque. El Toque is an independent media in Cuba. I went to see him. I told him, I have this idea. I want to do this podcast. And if you provide the budget for me to produce my podcast, this is going to be a podcast by El Toque.
Is it a newspaper? What is it? Is it a website?
Today, it's all online.
It's both, right.
He actually said, you know, let's run 4 episodes and see what happens. But, you know, by episode 2, he was convinced that it was going to work. So, yeah, let's do this. So we started working with them, and they were providing the budget. One of the first things he told me, and I was very pleased to hear this, we do not accept any funds or grants from the U.S. government, especially those funds that are designed for what they call regime change. And these are funds that are under the scope of the Cuban government. They want to see where this, because these are public funds, you know, it's online where the money is going and how that is being used. So I said, you know, I'm glad you said that, because I don't want to get in trouble, because you really get in trouble in Cuba if you use funds from the U.S. government for the regime change to produce anything. So we started working with them. They will provide the funds to us. And that was like this until September 2022, last year, when all of the people who were working for Etoque in Cuba, or at least all of the people I knew, were called by state security to have a meeting, and they told us that we would face serious consequences if we continue working with them. So all of these journalists, designers, software developers, all of them had to actually drop working with them, and El Enjambre had to detach from El Toque, and now we're alone.
Why did the government take those actions against El Toque?
Because they thought that El Toque was being very harsh in what they were publishing about the Cuban government. They just decided they can't do it. That's the thing you have to understand. There are no consequences for them. If they don't like something, they can just strip it away. There is nothing you can do about that.
That could happen to you tomorrow.
Of course. That could happen anytime. It could happen today. And this is something that you need to understand about Cuba. You won't go to any court to, you know, to challenge the government, because the courts are not independent in Cuba. And this is official news. This is not something I'm just saying. You know, the government recognizes that the courts are part of the government and they're not independent, right?
Yeah.
So when we were working with El Toque, we started accepting donations through PayPal, I guess something like you do. And the first thing we encountered was that one person wrote a memo on PayPal, and she said, this is the best Cuban podcast, and I really support you. So PayPal froze El Toque's PayPal account, because if you write Cuba, Cuban, or whatever related to Cuba on a memo on PayPal, they will close down your account, even though if you're not in Cuba. If you go to a Cuban restaurant and you say, oh, I love the Cuban restaurant, here is my spirit of the fair, they will close your account and they will freeze your money.
Uh-huh.
So they were able to solve this because they're a legal organization abroad. They're not in Cuba, you know, legally. They presented all the paperwork and they solved it. But once we had to separate from them, we stopped having the ability to get donations, because as a Cuban, I cannot open a PayPal or a Stripe or whatever account.
Violates the embargo.
Because of the U.S. embargo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then how do you do it?
So I have some leftover budget that is what I have been using to continue producing this season. And I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I'm trying to find a third party abroad that will help me to accept donations so we can continue producing in the future.
Where you live, there doesn't exist efforts from the American government to change hearts and minds. There is money available for anti-Cuban government propaganda. And then there are dire consequences for accepting that money and creating media that fits that narrative. But does that mean you can't take other money because it might be considered that kind of regime change funding? How does that work?
To be honest, I haven't risked to try that.
So you just don't take foreign money because you're out of caution?
Of course, yeah. I will always accept donations from my listeners, but I'm very worried that the Cuban government could build a case against me if I take money from a government, let's say.
Right.
So I try not to do that.
Have you been offered that?
I have. I won't say detail, of course, but I'm very worried about that being a problem for me.
Camilo, is it a question that you are not critical enough of the government to incur their wrath? Is it a show that is conceived of as taking it easy on the government?
We have a lot of criticisms. I don't think that a common criticism will be like we are being very soft on the government, but we do have a lot of criticism that we are not hard enough on the government. And you see this a lot on social media in Cuba, where people say it's all or nothing, where people think that if you don't say all of the words, you're not doing the right job. I don't see it that way. I have faced and have seen many Cubans facing the dire consequences of this. For me, my work is like a marathon, not a 100-meter run. I want to be able to have a very objective and clear way of saying things. that would allow me to run for as long as possible. But also, there is another thing. We have a lot of listeners who are people who currently support the Cuban government, and they would never listen to us if we talk about dictatorship and regime and all of this. They would never listen to our show because they don't want to get involved in that type of a speech. So what I try to do is to get as many people to listen to us as possible, and I want to try to bring them a very objective view on what is happening in Cuba, so I don't care about the criticisms on our work from people who want us to be even harder on the government, because I am happy just by opening eyes to issues that are not being discussed every day in our country.
Las familias de Marta y Roberto se opusieron a su noviazgo. Había un muerto por en medio y aquellas familias se tenían odio. Bueno, la cosa es que ellos se querían mucho y por eso por las noches ya tarde.
You are speaking to me from a conference in Vancouver. I'm sure there are many Cubans who would very much like to be in Canada, or at least that's something that we're told here. And I suppose if you wanted to, you could just not go home.
I have to be honest about this. I'm a person who is very objective and logical, and I don't have a very objective and logical explanation for why I don't want to flee my country. I think Cuba is home. I have had the opportunity to travel abroad. I have been in Europe, other places in Latin America. I have traveled extensively to the U.S. This is my first time in Canada. I'm loving it. But I have never felt at home abroad. I have never felt like a place where, yeah, I can see myself living here, you know. Maybe it's because I'm doing, you know, just a visit to a country, and I know exile is completely different because you are forced to go to this country and you're forced to get accustomed to this country, right? But I just don't see myself. And for me, it's hurting that people are being forced to leave the country. Some of them actively by the government, and some of them in a passive way. Because if you have nothing to eat, if you see your kids starving, you are being forced out of your country. And I want to see change in my country. I want to see a country where people feel free to speak their mind. I want them to be well. I want them to don't have to worry about what I'm going to have for dinner tonight, because this is a very common problem for Cubans. So this is a complete different mindset in our country for what the issues are and what the real problems are.
Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, you are traveling, and you say that you love Vancouver?
I only been here for 2 days. I'm going to leave soon. But yeah, I think it's a pretty city. Although I have to be honest, I have been impressed by the amount of homeless doing drugs in the street, just in front of everybody. Like the morning I arrived, I was walking downtown at, I think this is downtown, around 7:30 a.m. All of these homeless people were doing drugs, like right there. I was like, wow, I never seen this. And I have been coast to coast in the U.S. I have never seen this in my life. And it shocked me, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it's a terrible problem, and a lot of people are dying from toxic drugs. While we're talking, is there anything I can answer for you? Anything you're curious about?
You are telling me that you have a cartoonish view on Cuba and repression and freedom of speech and the political situation. But at the same time, Canada is one of the main issuers of tourists to Cuba. Like, Canadians go to Cuba a lot. So my question would be, like, are all Canadians aware of the situation and they say, let's go there to go to a hotel anyway? How does this work?
That is an excellent question. Well, I have been to an all-inclusive resort in Varadero. I have been to the, the one-day day trip to Havana to sip a cocktail at the bar where Hemingway hung out. And